all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Good morning and welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends on the Civic Media Radio Network, live from Chippewa Falls. I'm Pat Kreitlow. It's nice to have you here at 7:06 on this Friday morning, June 28th. We have Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez joining us this half hour to talk a bit about last night's presidential debate and the campaign all across Wisconsin, the U.S. Senate race, legislative races, and so much more. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel will join us at 7:30. We're getting near the end of the current term of the U.S. Supreme Court, and they have put out some interesting decisions, the conservative majority. One of them, without any shred of irony or self-awareness, essentially legalizes some forms of political bribery. And so we'll find out what Mr. Santel has to say about that, previewing his Saturday morning show here across the Civic Media Radio Network. If you'd like to reach us at any point during the hour, you can do so at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-75-CIVIC. You can call that number, you can text it, you can use the Civic Media app as well. The Brewers were off yesterday. They begin a weekend series against the Chicago Cubs at American Family Field. First pitch tonight is 7:10. The pregame gets started at 6:35 on Civic Media stations in Richland Center, Racine, Kenosha, Park Falls, and Oshkosh. The radar right now shows a lack of Wisconsin. There appears to be just a great big green blob that has swallowed much of the state and covered it in rain. It's a blob that, I mean, Brittany Merlot can tell us more about it because she's a meteorologist, so she's smart that way. Brittany, good morning.
Good morning. I like the description, the green blob.
It's a big blob because I'm looking at the radar here. This thing stretches past Winnipeg and Thunder Bay, envelops Minnesota, Wisconsin, goes all the way down to Kansas City, Tulsa, Wichita.
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 I said, I'm sorry. Let me for Greg again. Wichita. Greg, the rain extends from Thunder Bay down to Kansas City to Tulsa, including Wichita.
That's right.
There we go.
Yeah.
Is this the time that Brittany joins us?
Yes, it is.
Let's find out.
I am a lineman for the county.
The answer is no. She put her face in her hands and just gives a look like you are taking time away from my important weather report.
Sorry.
Which we will now resume. Here again is Brittany Merlot.
Couldn't help it. It happened, Pat. It just happened. Like I blacked out. What happened?
It just happens. It is just that big a storm system, which thankfully does not have the watches and warnings that you have in the traditional tornado alley. But it's a wet start to the day.
Oh, it sure is. And you guys have me laughing now. What a great start to the day. Fun stuff. Oh, my gosh.
Help.
Yes. So we're just looking at some light rain, some scattered showers as we go through this morning and into the afternoon. Nothing too serious, nothing major. It's not going to be a soaker at all. But as we go through the evening, this is what we're keeping an eye on for some strong to severe storms. Of course, the severe weather risk does stay more into Iowa, and it looks to fizzle out as it heads our way. But a lot of people want to go out tonight to Summerfest, of course, to the game out there, too. And we are looking at those storms arriving into the Milwaukee area around 6 to about 10. So some of those storms will be pushing through. We are looking at risks of some high winds and some small hail. I don't think this is going to be a big, major, severe weather event like we had earlier this week at all. So just a little wet and dreary, darker today, stuck under those cloudy skies and much cooler. Highs in the upper 60s far north to mid 70s everywhere else. And of course, we are taking the much cooler hit all weekend and some sunshine by tomorrow. We don't have any rain to worry about, even into Sunday as well. So a gorgeous weekend out there before the heat and humidity builds next week.
This is where we enter the bargaining phase and say, now we're going through this rain and cooler temps because the 4th of July is going to be so great. It's going to be like a 4 or 5 day weekend for most folks. And the weather's going to be perfect that entire time, they all say, wishfully.
I'll try. Never happens, but you know, we can cross our fingers.
I know. The heaviest rain right now is basically in the Rice Lake area, though Tony writes in on YouTube that it's raining cats and dogs in Ashland. And Rob writes in on Facebook, good morning from Tigerton. It's cloudy and 58 degrees. Looks like a day off from mowing. Last time in central Wisconsin, we had a rain, snow-free weekend. Was April 13th, 14th. It's nice Wisconsin isn't in a drought. I mean, that is true. Wow. That is true weather spotter territory right there when he says the last time central Wisconsin had a weekend with no rain or snow the whole weekend was April 13th, 14th.
Well, you know, the people who live it, who are outside every single weekend, really keep in touch with the fact that, hey, every weekend something's been happening. What's going on here?
And we heard it from Hans in terms of planting and cutting hay and everything else. So all we can say is, no drought.
That's
not the drill we're doing this time. Have a great weekend, Brittany.
You too, Pat. Thanks, Greg.
Craig applauding for the no doubt, no drought. In the headlines, again, we'll talk more about the debate with Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez coming up in just a bit. The Wisconsin Elections Commission yesterday rejected an effort to force a recall election of Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, determining that not enough valid signatures were collected. The vote by the three Republican commissioners and one of the three Democratic commissioners means that Voss will not have to stand for a recall unless a court intervenes. Voss was targeted for recall by fellow Republicans who say he has not been supportive enough. Former President Donald Trump did not do enough to try to overturn the results, the will of the Wisconsin voters, and did not try to impeach Megan Wolf, the state's top elections official, who has a national reputation for her expertise and fairness. But these folks wanted more to be done in terms of Trump's plot to overturn the election and were willing to turn on the most powerful conservative politician in the state to recall him to make their point. And it does not appear that it has worked out. Our friend Dan Schaefer over at the Recombobulation Area has a story on his site, and I see there's been some follow-up coverage from the Journal Sentinel as well, all about the lack of convention business in Milwaukee for the Republican National Convention. You'll recall that there was a bit of a debate about whether the city should pursue it after landing the Democratic convention, but then it wasn't really held because of the pandemic. So folks thought, well, let's try to get the economic shot in the arm from the Republican convention. There weren't really any other bidders of consequence, so the RNC did go with Milwaukee, figuring they could get a lot of stuff for free or discount because the infrastructure was already in place for the 2020 Democratic convention. But they also promised many visitors. They promised many millions of dollars. And what typically happens in the weeks prior to a convention is that all these different groups, campaigns, individuals, they like will reserve an entire restaurant, or they will book a theater for like a rally or a speech. And that is not happening. It's not happening in any broad scale. Gary Witt, president and CEO of the Pabst Theater Group, told Schaefer that the majority of the group's venues have nothing booked and will be dark for the Republican convention. That would include the Pabst Theater, the Riverside Theater, the Vivarium, the Fitzgerald. There will be one at Turner Hall Ballroom by one organization. But Witt characterized the Republican convention planning as, quote, underwhelming and a failure. It's a 100% case of overpromise, underdeliver on all parts by everybody, he told Dan for the Recombobulation Area. You know that we have also talked about Dan Jacobs, who was a chef on Top Chef Wisconsin and was right up there in the finals, has the Dan restaurant downtown as well, and has also mentioned that there has been next to nothing done for major bookings of his restaurant. They were told, you know, don't take reservations from your regular crowd of locals, because we're promising there's going to be some big events and they're just not materializing. And Jacobs and others have said it's not like they're going to be able to make up for that with their regular customers, because their regular customers are going to stay away from downtown because of the convention. There's going to be all these people. There's going to be all these traffic jams. There's not going to be, you know, anything convenient about downtown. But so far, Republican groups, conservative groups, independent groups, maybe even media groups are simply not booking these venues for whatever reason. Is it a show of a lack of enthusiasm for Donald Trump? Is it a concern about any blowback from the public? Whatever it is, it's not bringing the promised economic impact to downtown Milwaukee. Not yet. It's not to say that some of these things, you know, won't be turned around. But the way it's looking right now, downtown businesses in Milwaukee are going to take another hit from a convention that was awarded to them that now underperforms. Greg, I was going to ask you about Laughing Tap and who's there this weekend. I didn't want to forget this hour. Greg has, would you call this a side hustle?
No,
that'd be this fine radio show, and we appreciate that. But what do you have happening over there this week? Because I don't want to forget before we run out of time.
We have Allie Clayton tonight, 7:30, $15 tickets. I will be performing. LaughingTap.com is where the tickets are available. Tomorrow, Eitan Levine, one show, 7:30. Also tickets, $15. Come on down to either show. No drink minimum. Have fun. I'll be at both shows, but I'll be performing tonight.
I'm so jealous that I can't get down there. But I will. I will. Well,
I know you will. I know you will.
I promise. We're going to have Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez coming up next, followed by former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel at 7:30. Normally, Mark Jacob would be here at 7:30, but we're going to hear from him on Monday. I fear his head might explode trying to talk about the way that CNN put up the debate yesterday. He did write after there was a note that Melania did not join Donald Trump in Atlanta for the debate. Mark Jacob wrote, "If Biden's wife actively avoided him and almost never appeared in public with him, the New York Times would write a story a week about it." But there's a lot of things that fly under the radar with this guy, and we'll get into that with Mark Jacob. But we will continue with today's show and talk to the Lieutenant Governor, Sarah Rodriguez, coming up. You're up north. Yacht Rock Radio continues on a Friday morning, and while we await the Lieutenant Governor, who is probably doing a series of interviews, and we're waiting for the previous one to wrap up here, we can also take note that, yes, the Yacht Rock is going to roll on. It doesn't matter who the guest is. We got you covered all summer long. I discovered, Greg, do you have two accounts of anything, like two email accounts or two Facebook pages or anything like that? I mean, because I have a personal Facebook page, but I also have a political Facebook page. The handle is Pat Kreitlow Up North, all one word. But are you one of those that has a separate page for things as well?
I have some accounts. So I have, for Facebook, I have my personal account, which is just, you know, the friends and whatnot, blah, blah. And then I have a professional one, which is more comedy and more comic driven. And that's more in brand with all of my other social media, which is I Am Greg Bach. So if you look I Am Greg Bach on all social media, you'd find me there. But then I have an Instagram account for regular, and then I had a barber's account as well. So I have some things here and there, but not like two of everything.
You have a barber's account?
Yeah, yeah. When I was a barber, I used to post haircuts.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
The reason I ask about this is that I've discovered I have a bit of a problem with my Instagram account. I created two of them, and I remember I just said I have a clear delineation between the personal Facebook page and the work one. Well, the problem is I created two Instagram accounts, and it wasn't until last night while I was, you know, typing notes from the debate and everything, and I finally realized that my phone that I normally use for things has one of the Instagram accounts. On my browser is the other one.
Okay.
And there's a whole lot of messages in the inbox that, like, clips shared by, say, my daughters and my wife, who now probably think, God, Dad's the biggest jerk. He never like responds to any of these things that I put up. It turns out they were sending them to the account that I wasn't monitoring regularly. So anybody that was, you know, but it also gives me a built-in excuse from this point on. Like, oh, it was the other account. Sorry, I must have missed it.
So, Pat, you're saying you never, ever checked the account on the computer?
Well,
never, ever.
Didn't much.
Never, ever, ever.
gonna do a better job now. That's for sure.
You can log. You can log onto both accounts on your phone.
I know, but I lost the password for the one. So I have work to do. To put it that way. How when you lose a password and you got to get everything reset.
Yeah.
So we'll follow those foibles next week. But now we are joined by the Lieutenant Governor of the state of Wisconsin, Sarah Rodriguez. Governor, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Well, good to have you here. It's been a great year for talking to folks of all stripes. We had Elizabeth Warren in this week. I look to be talking to Bernie Sanders later today. Of course, we've had all kinds of surrogates from the Biden campaign. You've got a big U.S. Senate race. You've got new maps for all the legislative races. It all makes for a very exciting year. But, you know, we're going to go ahead and lead with the elephant in the room, or the donkey in this case, in that, as I said last hour, you know, in the debate, you know, neither candidate reminded us of, shall we say, the statesmen of the past, these grand orators and all of that. But on the other hand, this is one debate, and it's going to be a distant memory by November. At least that's the way that I've been looking at it, but I wanted to know your own impressions on the debate, and then we'll talk more about some of the other issues in the campaign.
Yeah, let's be honest, President Biden had a slow start, but it got better in the middle and towards the end, really hitting the type of accomplishments that his administration has done. And that is what it's going to be at the end of the day. It is going to be, what vision do we want to see for Wisconsin? What vision do we want to see for the United States? And, you know, ex-President Trump did not give any reason for anybody to vote for him during that debate. It was just a flurry of lies over and over and over again. I think right now over 50 have been documented. And I was listening to some of the folks who were on the fence, and this didn't fool them. They knew that he was lying. They knew he wasn't answering questions. It was just this flurry of non sequiturs and chaos and lies. And who wants that in their commander in chief, as opposed to who is actually delivering for Wisconsinites, which is President Biden? And I will say this, we have one of the lowest unemployment rates we've ever had in the state of Wisconsin, with the most people working. That's the kind of economic policy that President Biden has implemented. I want to see that for the next 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like if you're going to campaign on saying, you know, America sucks and the economy sucks and we're a laughing stock when we're not. But if you say that enough times, people will believe it. It is so much the opposite of what Ronald Reagan's Republican Party was, with the whole morning in America. You know, we can come into this shining city on a hill. There is no shining city on a hill in Donald Trump's world, unless it's Trump Tower, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know where he lives. I mean, I live here in Wisconsin, and it's an amazing place to live. It's an amazing place to raise my kids. I don't see the hellscape that Donald Trump sees. Certainly not here in Wisconsin. And I don't see it anytime I travel all across the state. And I have the privilege of being able to do that as Lieutenant Governor. People are proud of their state. They're proud of their country. And I don't see that resonating with the rest of either Wisconsinites or the rest of the Americans after this debate.
You know, on Monday, we're going to talk about there's a couple of constitutional amendments being proposed on the August ballot, which would tie a governor's hands when it comes to making investments in the state. And it leads me to this question. As you travel around the state and you see what's resulting from the bipartisan infrastructure law and from the American Rescue Plan and the decisions made by the Evers-Rodriguez administration about them, do you see something that's leading to public recognition and payoff by election time, as opposed to people aren't going to recognize how good these investments were until years down the line, when it might be too late to reward the people who did it?
So I am seeing that people understand that the investment that our administration has placed into particularly Main Street, Wisconsin, has had great results. I have been able to tour many of the main streets all across the state of Wisconsin, and they are vibrant. And that is because of the decisions we made about investing in our communities, and that those dollars came down from the Biden administration. You know, yes, we have these two constitutional amendments. We should vote no on both of those. We want to be able to invest quickly when we have these type of dollars coming from the federal government. And we've seen the type of chaos that the Republicans have within the Finance Committee. They're holding dollars back today that they already agreed that we would be able to use, things like PFAS funding to be able to clean that up. Do we want that same type of absolute chaos when we have other federal dollars in and we need to be able to invest quickly in things like we had in this emergency with these ARPA funds? We're also seeing that pay off as well. You know, if you look at Foxconn, you know, from the Trump administration, which never materialized, and now we've got Microsoft coming into that same space. That is from the Biden administration. That is from the Evers-Rodriguez administration. These are the types of accomplishments that people want to see. They want to see real accomplishments, not lies, not bluster. That's the type of thing I think people are going to be voting for in this November.
Yeah, it's again why after almost every first debate, the conventional wisdom has proven to be wrong, whichever side of the political aisle it comes on. Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, thank you for some of your time today to tell us a bit more about your thoughts on the campaign. We'll visit again soon.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. Coming up after the break, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel on this week's Supreme Court decisions. You're up north.
And money, Dad, get me out of this.
Ha! I know you're used to hearing Jim Santel during the first, the 7 a.m. half hour, but not at 7:35. We normally hear Mark Jacob. We'll hear Mark Jacob at 7:35 on Monday morning. Thanks to Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez for joining us. And besides, we'll take a little extra time for former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel because we're getting to the end of the current U.S. Supreme Court term. There's still a lot of homework to be turned in, apparently a lot of term papers to be written, and so we're getting them in drips and drabs, and there are still more to come, Mr. Santel. Good morning. How are you?
I am doing well. That's exactly right. The little anecdote on this is in the week when they were delivering some opinions. Justice Gorsuch was notably not on the bench, and also people noted that he has not authored a lot of opinions recently, and so that did lead to some good nature and, I think, tongue-in-cheek speculation that Neil was back in chambers feverishly finishing up, as you just said, his homework so we can get those out to the American public.
So it's a little bit chaotic. And as we go through some of these decisions, and we're going to go through at least five of them and then talk about the cases yet to come as early as today or next week. But I know that one theme I wanted to make sure that we hit is that in a couple of these cases, most notably the abortion case out of Idaho, but also there's a pollution case in Ohio, that in both cases, these are not final decisions. And much like the abortion pill case from a couple of weeks ago, they're kind of technical. They're cases about standing or technicalities, and really, these are issues that could all still come back when the conservative justices aren't burdened by worrying about how it'll appear for a presidential election. Or am I being too harsh on the justices?
No, I think you're exactly right. And it may not fall in the category of being out and out embarrassing, but as you said, we've got at least two of these six cases from just this past week already, where they basically sent things back and said, well, these are not ready for prime time, so to speak. The abortion case in Idaho, which we'll certainly chat about, I suspect, is significant because they said, we shouldn't have taken this one in the first place. The language they use is improvidently granted, which is a very fancy lawyer judge type way of saying, oops, we took this one too early. And they basically said, I should permit the lower courts to develop the record more on this. And until that happens, we're not going to decide this case at all. Improvidently granted. And of course, as you said, the other one is the pollution case, temporarily putting a hold on this EPA rule. but not definitively, not forever. And, you know, it does sort of make you think, well, gee, isn't the Supreme Court supposed to be the final arbiter of these things? And if indeed we're spending a lot of time looking at cases only to say in the end, gosh, send it back and bake it more. Most efficient way of operating a railroad here to mix metaphors or string site metaphors, probably not. I think your sense is probably right.
Well, yeah, because we hear all the time how crowded the courts are. And so, yeah, if they're taking up cases and then later saying, oh, we probably shouldn't have taken this up. Right. You know, it's not just wasting time, but I mean, that's delaying justice in other areas. Oh, I don't know, like presidential immunity claims, which right. we're still sitting on after 6 months. But, you know, we'll get back into that hopefully as well. There's one I wanted to really make sure to hit, and it deals with essentially bribery or gratuities, I guess you could call it. And Jim, you and I both know that the conservative justices on this court in any other setting would be in hot water or unemployed for the lavish gifts that they have taken from millionaires and billionaires. And so they have an interesting view on whether something is a, shall we say, quid pro quo bribe or just simply a gift.
Right, exactly. It is arguably one of the most interesting cases in terms of certainly the criminal law. And it comes out of our Seventh Circuit. There are only a couple of cases the Supreme Court in this term is looking at from our circuit, which, of course, is Wisconsin and Illinois and Indiana. This happens to derive from a mayor of Portage, Indiana, just adjacent to Gary. He takes, allegedly, and yes, a jury convicted him of bribery, basically $13,000 check to put in place some contracts for a trash trucking industry, getting contracts from the city. Goes to a jury trial. The jury returns a verdict finding that indeed he did in fact commit a crime under the federal code. Footnote to that, again, not to minimize the significance of the case, the statute under which he is indicted and charged and convicted is section 666 of Title 18 of the United States Code. He is convicted, goes up to the Seventh Circuit, and the Seventh Circuit says, yes, no problem with the statute here. This is a bribery. Gets to the Supreme Court, and again, as you indicate, this is Snyder versus United States. This is a case coming out just on Wednesday, 6-3, right down ideological lines. We should chat more about that. Says, no, this is not really bribery under the statute. This is a gratuity that he received after the fact, and for that reason, no harm done here. Mr. Snyder's conviction is vacated, overturned, and you may go on your way. And it does prompt, I think, very much back to your observation, an awful lot of people thinking, gosh, is this too close to home for members of the Supreme Court? Because you can argue that maybe some of a van, for example, some of these trips, other lavish things that they're getting as gifts might be gratuities in some broad sense. And if they say that this is a this is no problem here, maybe they're looking at their own situation saying, just like us, no problem here, nothing to look at, and go on your way.
Yeah, just like us, there's nothing to see here. Right. So one social media post gave us this hypothetical, and you could come up with many more, but let's go with this one. On election day, Biden loses the South, but sweeps the upper Midwest and wins with 270 electoral votes to 268. But then on December 12th, when all the electors meet, an obscure Virginia Democrat switches his vote to Trump, creating a tie. It goes to the House of Representatives, which would then elect Donald Trump. And then on January 21st, the day after Trump is sworn in, some billionaire somewhere gives that elector $10 million, let's say. That's what we're talking about.
Right, right. And it goes to this issue also inside the immunity cases. You and I have chatted about official conduct, which is permitted. You described the process just right. It's been invoked a couple of times in our history, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if the genesis, if the motivation for the invocation of that kind of conduct is criminal in nature, then you've got a larger problem. You not only have a criminal prosecution, presumably, but it's one that affects something as important as who the president of the United States of America is. We talked before about another variation on that inside the immunity issue. Suppose, for example, the president decides to grant a pardon to someone. He's got virtually unfettered discretion to do just that. can do that. That's in the Constitution. But again, it turns out a bribe, much like we've got in the scenario you just described, just like we have in Snyder, somebody comes along and says, well, I want you to pardon Jim Santel. And oh, by the way, here's $1 million to do it. The genesis, the motivation for it is criminal in nature. And yet you're committing then this official act, arguably, not really, but arguably on the surface, authorized by the Constitution. It is a conundrum of great, great import here. And the hypothetical that you just described is even more significant, I would argue, than even the pardon possibility here, just because it goes to who our president is and how that happens. And it's not an impossible scenario. The rule of the recent times has been what, Pat? Expect the unexpected, right? And predictions, they don't mean it. They don't mean nothing, so to speak, but they don't mean everything either.
What's the significance of this big national opioid settlement apparently being tossed out by the court?
Right. So this is the Sacklers, who we will call, where I think most people would acknowledge, and they themselves have acknowledged, were principally responsible for our huge opioid crisis, which continues to put us in great danger. People dying, people again suffering tremendously. And what happens is that they go into what's called Chapter 11 reorganization in the federal bankruptcy court. They're seeking basically to limit their exposure here in the bankruptcy court. And the bankruptcy court does have jurisdiction over this kind of thing to reorganize a company. But what the Supreme Court says in this case just yesterday, 5-4, basically says that the bankruptcy court does not have the capacity to extinguish, to get rid of, to dismiss all kinds of claims that are out there against this company that may not be a part of that plan. And so it basically says, bankruptcy court, you overextended your authority, can't do this. And it really does change not only the arc for the opioid issue, which is huge, have to go back to square one and figure out something with the Sackler family. Purdue Pharma is the name of the company. But it also, again, has greater implications because there are other companies out there not involved necessarily in the opioid matter, but who also run into bankruptcy court from time to time as a way of kind of protecting their larger interests. And people are looking and parsing through the language of the Sackler case and saying, gee, does this limit our capacity as corporate entities to protect ourselves down the road? It has this great impact, which both the majority and the minority identified as well. No small thing there either.
There's one more decision that came out that may be a harbinger of what's yet to come in these cases, that the Supreme Court has stripped the Securities and Exchange Commission of one of their tools in fighting securities fraud. And that gets to the bigger case that's still lurking out there, Jim, and that is that the six right-wing justices have essentially gone to war against the regulatory state, the administrative state, the thing that gives us protections for customers, for employees, for the environment. They are very close to going four square on the record with dismantling the kind of government that we've had for the past 100 years.
No understatement there at all, Pat. And again, for listeners, I know you know this, Greg knows this as well. The case to watch, whether it's today or Monday, is Loper Bright Enterprises. And the word is Chevron. If the Supreme Court decides to kick Chevron out of our jurisprudence, that changes the way that agencies work. This particular case is, perhaps, as you indicated, a harbinger. You've got the SEC around for, what, almost 100 years. And the claim at which the Supreme Court embraced is that when you go in and have civil penalties imposed upon you, that's Mr. Jarchese here, he's a hedge fund operator, got in some trouble, you're entitled to a jury trial under the Seventh Amendment. And of course, there are many, many agencies out there that operate this way with what are called ALJs, administrative law judges. You don't get juries for all this, but they do, in fact, adjudicate claims. And when you're done with that, that's when you go to the federal court to appeal the agency decision. This case, which is going to change dramatically the way that the SEC works when it comes to administrating, making decisions out here, also has implications for all kinds of other agencies, once again, just beyond the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, the Internal Revenue Service, the Environmental Protection Agency, Social Security Administration, National Labor Relations Board, Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Those are major agencies that also do this kind of thing with administrative judges. And now everybody's going to be looking at them, and maybe those are the next cases. Challenging how they do work could arguably bring our administrative process, even on this case, to, if not a halt, plainly changing the way they do things and slowing things down dramatically. For whom? For the American public.
And I've made the point as well, and I'll continue making it, that what they appear to be seeking is similar to what Republican legislators are seeking, and that is the ability for politicians to micromanage, to say, we'll decide, not scientists, if a drug is safe. We'll decide, not experts, if this pollution is bad. And it will, and Donald Trump pledging to get rid of the civil service and put more political appointees in there would make everything. If you are cynical about politics and government today, just wait till what happens if this goes through.
Right. And again, we didn't see it a lot last night in the debate, but he talks about this administrative state, which is another way of describing what you described. Again, we abhor that concept, this notion somehow there are all these people out there, the mysterious people, we don't know who they are, making all these decisions for us. It's a state. We need to bring it down, and we need to wrestle those decisions back into our control, which are the politicians you just described, Pat. That is, again, not the legal word, that is craziness. And not only does it not exist, you've got great civil servants out there who do their jobs day to day. But if you decide to go down that and really embrace this notion that there's an administrative state that needs to be stopped and brought to its knees, wait for the other things that are going to be brought to its knees also. And again, this SEC thing does sort of indicate that maybe today, maybe on Monday, gosh, the Supreme Court dropkicks Chevron in this larger case involving fisheries. We are in a whole lot of hurt here in America, and we'll see what happens.
This and so much more, Jim Zintel will have on Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings, starting at 9 across the Civic Media Radio Network. Jim, thank you very much, as always.
Always a pleasure to see you, Pat. Have a good weekend. Take care.
You as well. We'll wrap things up talking a little sports with Dan Schumacher next. You're up north. I had so much fun last week, prior to leaving for Orlando and the Disney and Universal Studios trip, prior to that, recording last Friday's interview with Dan Schumacher and Bob Gallagher from WEAU 13 News. You guys are all so busy, but boy, if I could get away to get Bobby to do that more often and get you two on, especially when the Cubs are, you know, stinking up the joint, that would bring me great joy.
God, they're horrible. They're really horrible. I mean, it's unwatchable right now. It's unwatchable.
But you're going to watch.
For me, like last night's debate was unwatchable.
But so, you're going to watch. That's the thing. You're much like I had to watch the debate. You're going to watch this weekend, Craig Counsell again. Because didn't the Cubs take 2 out of 3 earlier this year at American Family Field?
Yep.
So, you know.
7-10 tonight. 7-10. I'll be watching the game, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere.
All right, let's give some props to a Brewers team that has now had a record 14 different starting pitchers. We've praised Pat Murphy plenty. I'm just asking the question, how does anybody manage a pitching roster with like 10 pitchers on the injured list? And in the case of Dallas Keuchel, day before yesterday, you didn't know who your starting pitcher was until he signed a contract 2 hours before game time. Yeah, this is crazy.
It's amazing.
What a season.
I'll tell you what, like it goes back to what we talked about a couple weeks ago. For me, what Murphy did, how good of a manager was Counsell? It really comes – because, I mean, he had Murphy as your bench coach, and look at him now. He's the head coach, and he's the head skipper, and he's he even looks better than Counsell did in some of these moves, especially the pitching moves as we talk about. So, I don't know if it was Counsell was still the brain and trustworthy manager, or was it Murphy in his ear helping him make the moves? I just keep coming back to that.
All right. Well, we, like I said, we've got a nice 3-game series to watch here. Let me get the times on there. 7:10 tonight, 3:10 on Saturday afternoon, and 1:10 on Sunday afternoon. And I believe I might have mentioned it once, twice, three times that you can catch tonight's game starting at 6:35 with the pregame on WRCE in Richland Center, WRJN in Racine Kenosha, WCQ in Park Falls, and WISS in Oshkosh for a 7:10 start. start. Now we get to the part of the program where Pat again exposes himself as a baseball fan and knows next to nothing about basketball, but there's a rumor that there was an NBA draft, and there's a newspaper here out of Milwaukee that tells me that the Milwaukee Bucks bolstered their front court depth by selecting forward Tyler Smith with the number 33 pick, hailing from Fort Bend County, Texas. The 19-year-old has been playing G League Ignite basketball since 2021. And that is the extent of my Milwaukee Bucks draft coverage for folks. But I did see a post here or there, or just that LeBron James was trending, and you kind of yep. dropped his name as well.
It probably saved the broadcast last night. In my opinion, it was another thing that's unwatchable, the NBA draft. And what's unbelievable is that if you go back and look at the replay of it, when one of these guys got drafted, not only did it put their name, where they're from, what they're doing, but what they were wearing.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I was blown away. And it says, I mean, they showed guys with they'd have descriptors underneath as he's walking up to the stage, what kind of jewelry he's wearing, what kind of suit he was wearing, who made it. I'm like, that's more important than your draft status itself. I mean, really?
Oh, man.
But I think last night, as I was trying to get to, hey, LeBron James got his dream. He's going to play with his son for the Lakers.
So the Lakers drafted Bronny James.
Yes, he did. Yes, they did last night. And so he'll join his dad as he wanted. He kicked and screamed until he got his way. And Jeannie Buss, probably thought it's a good thing. And,
okay, let's share some of the more enjoyable reactions to this. Here's one that says, it has been discovered that LeBron James is sleeping with his newest teammate's mom. Okay, there's that. There's also the best LeBron stat of all time might be that this kid that just got drafted to the NBA, while LeBron is still averaging as many points, assists, and rebounds per game as he did when this photo was taken 17 years ago. In other words, it's Bronny as a toddler, and he has no record, but he's drafted by the Lakers because your dad's there.
I thought there was some interesting things that came up in the broadcast where they talked about Bronny James's statistics in his 1 year in college at USC. But he was always listed at like 6'4". When he got to the NBA combine and when they did the measurements, he's 6'1". So he doesn't have the physical stature that most NBA point guards have. And especially doesn't have the stature of his dad, who's 6'5", 6'6", and is just built, and strong. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how that's all going to work out, but I'm sure I don't know if I want my own son in the locker room with me all the time.
We're
on the road and living in motels, and I don't want to know what he's doing, and he doesn't need to know what I'm doing. That kind of thing, I just think it's weird.
It feels like pressure too. It's like, I want my son to play with me in the NBA. Like, of course he's going to get what he wants. It's not a matter of anything other than him getting what he wants.
I mean, the last time this really worked out was the Griffeys. I mean, between Ken Griffey Sr. and Jr., they were both legitimate Major League Baseball players at its best.
Yep.
And it's dumbs down the NBA or milks it down a little bit.
And that's why I'm going to put this disclaimer in. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that, obviously I want them to fall and fail anytime they play the Milwaukee Bucks. But, this kid's been watching his dad. He's been doing his practice. He's decided to follow in his footsteps. I hope it works out for him. I'm not going to root for failure. I'm skeptical, but I'm not going to root for failure. Put it that way.
I'm anxious to see what kind of contract he gets compared to other people that have been drafted in that same position the second day of the draft.
I know what
your
it's going to be.
Your dad's paying you.
Yeah, it's an allowance. It's an allowance. We've put in your contract, and you don't get any negotiation on this. Your dad decides your allowance each week and how you've done. That would be outstanding. So,
hey, is it raining there?
It's raining a lot here. It's raining Holy a lot cow, by yeah. you. It's raining.
Oh my God!
It's raining all the way down to Wichita. I heard, but no, oh don't, God. Greg. False alarm. Don't do it.
Yeah.
I am a lineman. Okay,
oh my
sorry.
God.
Yes, it's a lot of rain. Stay dry. Have a great weekend, and we'll chat more next week.
See you guys.
Oh no, we won't. We won't because it's 4th of July weekend.
Right.
But right, I'll I'll be seeing. We'll be talking. All right.
Yep. Happy care. 4th of July, everybody.
You too, buddy. Thank you.
Greg, we'll see you Monday. We'll see you next month in July.
See you next month, buddy. All right.
Thanks to all of you for joining us as well for Up North News Radio. Have a wonderful and safe weekend. Again, we'll have a guest from the League of Women Voters on to talk about the August constitutional referendums. That's coming up Monday morning, and perhaps an interview with Bernie Sanders. Have a great weekend.